I don't know when that's been.
That is an unusual event. We have people who go in and out of the call, but I've never really had everybody get kicked off the call at the same time. We must be saying something very, very real, whatever it is. I have nothing in particular to write regarding the yeshiva, except for the fact that they study and pray throughout the whole week. I was giving them a class every day for about 2 hours. I worked hard, but it was well worth the effort. We must pay attention to the money that they receive, so that even though it might be used now for studying Torah, not for its own sake, eventually it will serve the purpose stated in the Talmud. From doing not for its own sake, one will come to do for its own sake. The yeshiva is the Kabbalah Center. It's not named that. It has a different name in those days. It was named by Rabbi Ashlag. I think it's called Kol Yehuda, the voice of Yehuda, which can be translated as the voice of the Jews or the voice of Rabbi Yehuda Ashlag. But Rabbi Brandwein and Rabbi Ashlag were part of the religious community in Israel during the 20s, 30s, and 40s, and 50s, and 60s up until Rabbi Brandwein, Rabbi Ashlag's passing, and then Rabbi Brandwein was considered part of the establishment. Rabbi Brandwein was the rabbi of Histradut. Histradut is the labor union in Israel. There's only one labor union in Israel. Every union is part of Histradut. And Histradut is not made up of religious people. They're made up of secular Zionistic people. They came to Israel out of Russia primarily. Yes, people came from the Sephardic communities as well, but most of them came out of the Ashkenazi community. They brought the values of communism. They brought the values of loving your neighbor as yourself, but not expressed in a pure way. And Rabbi Brandwein is the rabbi for the labor union. And how did they pay attention to him? They used to have their annual dinner on the night of Yom Kippur, the night we're supposed to be fasting, the night we sing Kol Nidre. This is the night that the labor union would have, year after year, would have its annual dinner, where they would elect the new president. And Rabbi Brandwein was the rabbi of the labor union. Why did the labor union want a rabbi? They didn't. But part of the politics in Israel was they needed a rabbi. And Rabbi Brandwein then became responsible for distributing funds that he received from the government for being their rabbi. Part of those funds that he distributed went to the students of the Kollel. It still does today. In most yeshivot, people are paid to study Torah. Americans, when they go to the yeshivot, sometimes are asked to pay for a fee. Most of the time they're not. The classes are free. They're not free because the government is paying these people to teach them. And it leads to great strife politically between the secular Israelis and the religious community. Because on the physical level, the secular Israeli sees the religious man not working, not contributing, and being paid to do nothing. Of course, it's not nothing, because if Torah study were to stop, there would be no state of Israel. Understanding this, and understanding this political issue, is key to understanding the nation state of Israel as it exists today. And listen to how Rabbi Brandwein describes it. Yes, Chris.
The people we have here in this country, for example, that are studying Torah, does that benefit this country like it does Israel?
Does studying Torah in America benefit America? Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Part of the diaspora is spreading the Jewish world among the nations. What is the role, what is the purpose of the diaspora? Yes, the Jews sinned and the effect was to no longer have the temple. And the effect was to be sent into exile. But so what? Is the exile part of God's plan? The overall plan, if Edom accepted their role, then what would happen is in Israel, the Jewish world, the Jewish study of Torah would draw the light of Hashem, the light of Chokmah, down from the spiritual world into the physical world. And then if Edom was doing its job, that light would be spread horizontally around the world, into every part of the world, every nation would have its role in spreading that light horizontally, so to speak, that is drawn vertically, so to speak, by the Jewish world. That is the original plan of God, as expressed by the prophets, expressed through the process. There was originally Adam, and up to Noah's generation, every human being could correct the whole. From Noah to Abraham, every family could correct the whole. After Abraham, the only way to correct was by a nation, and that nation was the Jewish nation. And the Jewish nation were injected with an additional level of soul at Mount Sinai. And that process now entailed the Jewish nation draws energy, light, fulfillment that no other nation is capable of receiving, from the spiritual frame to the physical. But in the physical frame, that energy would have been passed to Edom and be distributed across the 70 nations. But Edom didn't accept that. They wanted full control. They wanted the ability to control the pipeline. And therefore, the Jewish nation was attracted to the physical world through the incitement of the Greeks and the Romans, the incitement of Hellenistic attitudes and values, causing the Jewish nation to commit chetz, to commit sins, the effect of which is the diaspora, the exile. But that's all part of God's plan, because now the Jewish world draws that light horizontally to some degree. The Jewish world is not capable of spreading that light to every corner of the world, to every nation. The people of the other nations still have the responsibility to spread that light horizontally. But by being in the exile, the Jewish world is able to draw that light directly into that area of the world. And that's why you have a whole different world today that people aren't aware of. Because prior to this, every part of the world had Jews within it. Every country had Jews. Every city had Jews. They were all through. We were all through this world. We were Jewish. We were Spanish Jews. We were English Jews. We were French Jews. We were Angolan Jews. We were Chinese Jews. We brought the light, and the other nation observed us, learned from us. And at the same time, we elevated sparks from all around the world. Jewish people had the responsibility of elevating sparks by doing good deeds in and around those countries. If the Edomites and the other nations had done their job, Jews did not have to be physically present to elevate those sparks. But they didn't do their job, as we didn't do our job, and the result is we live in exile, we live throughout. But in today's world, half of the Jewish world is in Israel, and half of the Jewish world is in America. And there's at most 1% in all of the other countries of the world. It's a totally different diaspora today than it's ever been before. But the answer to your question is yes. The study of Torah in these countries draws the light of Torah to these countries, to these locations, in order to attract the people to the study of Hashem, to attract the people into the concept of the B'nai Noah, the children of Noah, the seven constant mitzvot that have been the responsibility of every nation since Noah's time, since he left the ark. I think I answered your question. So I was saying, look at how Rabbi Brandwein speaks of the yeshiva and of the money that he's paying to these people. Look at how he speaks to them. He speaks of them. We must pay attention to the money that they receive. These are not close people. They're studying in the yeshiva. Were they studying Talmud? No. Were they studying Kabbalah? Yes. Were they close? Look at the way he phrases himself and compare it to the way he phrased himself to Rabbi Berg. And yet, we'll read other stories through this book. And I'll tell you other stories about him through these classes, where Rabbi Brandwein was known by secular Israelis. They described him, he's not a rabbi, he's a Kabbalist. He loves us. He's not like these religious people who don't do anything. and yet he expresses unhappiness that his students receive the money not lishmo, lo lishmo, not for its own sake. They were not studying Torah for its own sake. They were studying Torah because they got paid. This is how they earn their living. In the days of the tribes, we have the tradition that Issachar and Zebulun had an agreement. And that throughout the centuries, that same agreement has been made between Jewish people forever. And what does the agreement say? It's a very simple agreement. Half of what I earn in the physical world, I give to you to support your study, your Torah study. In exchange for that, you give me half of what you receive in the world to come. And the way that agreement is written, the rabbis tell us it applies in the next world, the world after Mashiach. Torah study reveals light. It reveals fulfillment. The money that's donated, and there's great mitzvahs. The Talmud's filled with stress and discussion about how important it is for the secular, for the person earning a living, one, to study Torah also, but knowing he can't study all the time, to find someone who will and pay them to do so, in exchange for receiving a share of the light that they reveal. It's a very great lesson, very great understanding that has yet to really, I mean, it's been lost in our generation. Was it true earlier? There are still wealthy Jewish people who follow the pattern, but they don't talk in terms of receiving the world to come because they are not taught to think like that anymore. Rabbi Brandwein was upset that these students were not learning Torah for its own sake. He was upset that they were accepting money, and they had to be watched because they were learning Torah not for its own sake. And they were learning the deepest part of Torah called Kabbalah. And it's hinted at in this paragraph, not in the full description, just hinted. And when does this apply? When the student sees and feels the hidden light of life in our holy Torah. As the verse says, "For whoever finds me finds life." Then his study of the Torah will become unto him an elixir of life. And then I am certain that he will not withdraw from it. For who would want to withdraw from life? It's an amazing, amazing revelation. Rabbi Brandwein is saying the Torah study awakens the spark in the Pintaliyid, is the term the Baal Shem Tov used. That point in your heart, and Rabbi Lightman speaks of it all the time, he doesn't call it Pintaliyid, that point in your heart that connects you to the spiritual world. That is the purpose of Torah study. That is the purpose of Torah mitzvot. To awaken the connection, the senses that are built into the human body and consciousness about the spiritual worlds. That is Torah lishma, Torah for its own sake. When you feel that, nothing will stop you from Torah study. When you feel that, nothing can hold you back. Not the comments of your friends that says, what happened to you? Where have you been? Where are you going? What are you doing? What kind of foolishness is this? And that's just the polite things they say. And the Zohar is filled with prophecies about how people of the last generation will be looked on in a negative way, a degrading way, for wanting to study Torah. How is Torah being sold in the marketplace, as Rabbi Avraham Azulai said it needed to be? It's not being sold, it's not being marketed Torah lishma, Torah for its own sake, because it does your soul good, because it awakens the spark in you. How is it being sold? What drew each of us to Kabbalah? The promise that we would have a chaos-free life. The promise that things would improve. Is this lishma for its own sake? Of course not. But how do we attract people? And Rabbi Berg is an absolute genius in packaging this material in such a way that it reaches out to people and draws them, because the Torah teaches, first, let them study Torah. Lo lishmo, not for its own sake. And then the Torah will change them to study for its own sake. And here Rabbi Brandwein is saying, these religious people, I'm paying them to study Torah. Lo lishmo. They have to be watched and observed to make sure they're moving on the path towards studying Torah lishma. It applies to each of every one of us. This is not something that's them. This is us. Have we awakened the Yipintaliyid, that little spark? Do we sense the spiritual worlds? Or do we strive to see it, to connect to it, to want it, to hunger for it? Are we willing to give up our life in order for that to happen? This is Torah lishmo. We see it in the last generation. We see it in the generation that came, that survived the Shoah, who came to America and built the Jewish world in America. This is part of God's plan. How do we treat these giants of Torah from the last generation? Have you heard of them? Rabbi Aaron Kotler. How many others do you know? On my website, I've put a whole series of tzaddikim, many of them from the last generation. But there's a whole book of controversy between a rabbi in Southern California who writes, these men were not lo lishmo. They didn't study Torah lo lishmo. They studied it for the honor. And the Zohar says, this is the last generation, the rabbis will have the root of their soul, will be from the heir of Rav, seeking the honor of being a rabbi. And what will they find? What do we find? We find rabbis who are pedophiles. We find rabbis who are thieves. We find rabbis who fit the full mold of the negative human attributes. We just have to remember they're in the process just like we are. They are not yet complete, just like we are not yet complete. It isn't about judging them, it's about learning from the experiences. Being in the week of the portion of Korach, I thought that I would expound a little upon the subject. And Korach took. Rashi of blessed memory commented, he took himself to one side, etc. Or as Onkelos translated, he separated himself. Onkelos is the Aramaic translation of the Torah. It gives us great insights into what the meaning and the understanding of the Torah was in the generations before. That is partially why we have a study mitzvah to read the portion of the week in Hebrew twice and in Aramaic once. And no rabbi has ever said, stop the Aramaic, when they've said, read it in your own language. So literally we are to be reading or scanning the Torah four times each week. The meaning of one side can be understood by explaining the two questions that Korach asked Moshe. Must a talit, a prayer shawl that is completely techelet, have a tzitzit? Or is it exempt from this requirement? And the second question, does a house full of books need a mezuzah or not? What did Korach intend by asking these two questions? And what is concealed within those two questions? The two questions, let's frame them so we understand them. We have a commandment, a mitzvah, to wear tzitzit that has a string of techelet, one of the four strings that make up the tzitzit, are to be dyed the shade of blue called techelet. Techelet is the blue of the sky on a sunny day without clouds. What's the question that Korach is asking? If I have a whole shirt of the techelet blue, do I need a tzitzit? What is the logical answer to that question? Why would you need one string out of four techelet if you have the whole shirt that color? Whatever attribute techelet gives, the shirt of techelet must give it also, in more strength than the tzitzit does. God forbid that I said this. God forbid that you think that's truth. But that's the frame of the question. The other question, every room has a mezuzah. Every door frame has a mezuzah. This is the mitzvah. Except bathrooms and rooms with a Torah. You don't need a mezuzah on the outside of the door going into the synagogue that has a Torah in an ark. You don't put a mezuzah on that door. Yet, even in the Kabbalah Center, that door has a mezuzah. But the halakha says you don't have to do so. And what is the idea? What is the questioning here? If I have a room full of holy books, if I have a room full of Torahs, of scrolls, with the Word of God, why do I need a mezuzah on the wall, on the door? And the logical answer is, you don't. The logical answer, the rational answer to the question of the Tehillot, the shirt of blue Tehillot should be enough. We don't have to put Tehillot in the tzitzit. This is the questions that the Midrash says Korach asked. He took himself to one side. He said, there is God, and God is rational. God is not supernatural. God is not super rational. God is not on the level of intuition. God is logical. If I'm logical, I can become God. And that is the path to God. That's the position that Korach took in his argument with Moshe. It wasn't that he really cared or believed that. What he wanted was the power and the importance of being a leader in Israel. And the technique he used was to attract people with logic. He asked the questions publicly. Moshe taught publicly. Korach asked. Moshe answered thinking it was an honest question, striving for truth. But there was an agenda to the questions, and that's what Rabbi Brandwein is explaining to us. The meaning of Korach took himself aside. Because he asks questions that were not searching for truth. He asks questions that were designed to attract followers. The answer to the tzitzit question is, we don't understand tzitzit. It's a hook. It's some kind of mitzvah that has a purpose, and we don't understand that purpose. But we do it anyway because God has told us it benefits us. Yes, we can understand that by looking at the tzitzit, we protect ourselves. By looking at this unique color that we lost it for centuries. What is this unique color? Today it has been rediscovered. Today, I recommend My teacher recommended some of my teachers, others don't. The Kabbalah Center has not taken a position. Rabbi Lightman, I don't have any idea what he has said. But in today's world, there is this discussion. There is this Tehillat Blue available again. And how is it made available? Because there's a crustacean, a sea creature, in the land of Zebulun that, when taken out of the ocean, its dye, it's able to be crushed, and a fluid comes out of it that is black in color. But as it dries in the sun, it turns blue. It turns the color of Tehillat. And that's the secret that was lost. Why was it lost? Because we didn't share. Only one family was given the secret. And when that family was sent into diaspora, the information was lost and no one knew where it was. But there were hints, and it has been rediscovered, although the Jewish world does not yet accept it completely. So you will go into a synagogue and see tzitzit of four white string, because we had lost it. And the rabbis said, wear tzitzit anyway, even though it doesn't have the effect. And Korach was asking, if I have the tzitzit color, if I have the Tehillat color, why do I need the tzitzit? I'm rational, I'm logical. I don't need a tzitzit if I have the power of the color. And Moshe was saying, we don't know what the reason for the Tehillat is. Wear the tzitzit. Follow what the guidelines that God gives us. Be intuitive. Don't be logical. And the same thing applies to the mezuzah. The Zohar teaches us that there's a negative entity that stands at every door. And it has permission if you walk outside your door. If you don't have a mezuzah on your door, there is that entity waiting, jumps on your back, and follows you the whole day, making sure you have a chaotic day. Now, of course, that only happens if you don't follow the mitzvah. That only happens if you're negative and allow your protection shield open. But the mezuzah is there. But Korach's question, logically, I have a whole room full of God's words. Why do I need a mezuzah? And logically, you don't. But practically, this particular entity has a mitzvah it must follow. And that is, when it sees the shin of Shaddai, it has to leave the doorway and not jump on the people who go in and out. Intuitive, not logical. And we have only touched this first letter. Our hour is up. I know you're both tired. I'm tired. Are there any questions?
Hanoi?
Yes.
I've been confronted with these mitzvahs that I don't have to mention the names at all, but Zizan told me I do not wear Zizis, and oh man, and that I'm only responsible for the 7 Melkite laws, and I shouldn't be doing those things that was given to the priesthood, which was Israel. So I've been tossed back and forth with this, and since you're talking with it tonight, where do I stand with that?
Chris, we've had a discussion about the man from Nazareth, correct?
Yes.
You are aware today that the way the teachings are, as of today, the teachings of the man from Nazareth would be considered idol worship, correct?
Yeah.
You are prepared to say, I cannot follow these teachings anymore. I'm putting words in your mouth that you haven't said to me, so I'm not asking you to say yes or no to this. But once those aspects are reached in the heart of a non-Jewish person, that person becomes what's called a righteous Gentile, a B'nai Noah, a children of Noah. And that person is able to study Torah just as any Jewish person is able to study Torah. There is a section of Torah that is not healthy for the B'nai Noah to study. That section has to do with the sacrifices, because the B'nai Noah, even if he converted, could never be a Kohen. He could never be a priest dealing with the study of the sacrifices. Everything else in Torah is open to the B'nai Noah to study. As you study, the Pintel Yid opens up within you. The Pintel Yid connects you to the intuition. What does your intuition say about wearing tzitzit or putting a mezuzah on your house?
You're asking me?
It's a rhetorical question that you should be asking yourself. You study with me. You study with me more than any other student. You study Torah. You want to wear a tzitzit? Wear a tzitzit. It's your decision. You are accepting the mitzvah on yourself. What is that acceptance? The Jewish soul, born into a Jewish world, is given 613 mitzvot. You're given 7. Do those 7 include many of the 613? The answer is yes. You keep them kosher. Why? Rhetorical question. Because you studied Torah and you intuitively said, I need to do this. The same applies to every mitzvah, except the study of animal sacrifice that is on the level that the Kohen needs to know. He needs to study. You can't become a Kohen, neither can I. You know, there is the old joke of the man, the wealthy man went to the rabbi, the Orthodox rabbi, and said, Rabbi, I want to be a Kohen. I'll make a $1 million donation, make me a Kohen. And the rabbi says, get out of here, I can't make you a Kohen. As much as I'd love the $1 million, I can't make you a Kohen, get out of here. He goes to the conservative shul, makes the same offer. The conservative rabbi says the same thing. I can't make you a Kohen. He goes to the Reform rabbi, makes the offer. Here's $1 million, make me a Kohen. The rabbi makes him a Kohen. He calls him a Kohen from now on. But tell me, now that I've made you a Kohen, why did you want to be a Kohen? Rabbi, I'll tell you the truth. My grandfather was a Kohen. My father was a Kohen. I wanted to be a Kohen too.
That's good.
As a Jewish person in a non-Jewish world, as a non-Jewish person in a Jewish world, you walk a very fine line. There is no ritual for the B'nai Noach. It is not a religion. It's a spiritual path. It's a spiritual path appropriate for every one of the 70 nations. Each nation has its own spiritual path, just as the Jewish nation has 12 spiritual paths, one for each tribe. Listen to your intuition. If your intuition says, I am willing to accept the mitzvah upon myself, then do so. It is not up to someone else, a rabbi or a spiritual guide, to tell you what to do in this regard. What does your heart say? Are you willing to take the abuse of the society around you? There are people in Georgia, there's a whole community of Georgia in Georgia wearing tzitzit. They financed the study that revealed the Tehillot. They made donations. And elsewhere in Rabbi Brandwein's books, letters, we'll find out that maybe that donation should not have been accepted. Because typically, it is very difficult for the non-Jewish soul to achieve a level of Torah lishmo, Torah for its own sake. Doesn't mean it's impossible. And it doesn't mean it's you, because I said the non-Jewish soul. And there's a basic truth. If you study Kabbalah, you have a Jewish soul. You may not have the role in this lifetime to become Jewish through halakhic standards, but you have a Jewish soul. You were present at Mount Sinai. You heard the Esser Dibrot along with the rest of us. Listen to your heart.
That touches me big time. Oh boy. Yeah, I've tried to leave in past years at certain points. I wanted to leave this alone. But the only time, I have never been able to get it out of me. It haunts me day and night in the years that I was having difficulty with both sides. But now it's like fire in your bones. It does not leave you alone. It stays there continually, 24/7, which I'm happy about. I really got tired of them being confronted with the rabbinical sources telling me I can't do this, I can't do that, because I didn't have Jewish blood. Because my intuitive self told me, yes, do this, yes, do that. So you're really a big help here.
You're welcome. I am only teaching the truth that I have been taught. That we see with vision, we hear with ears, we smell with our nose, we taste with our mouth and tongue, we touch with our hands. And all of that is designed by the Creator to give us an illusion. All I'm telling you is to look past the illusion by listening to your intuition.
I agree.
Any other questions? Marcia, are you still there?
Yep. I am. Can you hear me?
Yes, I heard you, yes. Do you have any questions, or we'll just call it a night?
Let's call it a night.
Shalom, everybody.
Shalom, Marcia.
Shalom.
Shalom.